Trending Topics.
Okay, welcome back.
Welcome back, guys.
We're here. We're doing it.
Yep. We have another special guest, and we're very excited to introduce her, get this going. We have a really exciting topic as well on the topic, especially of attachment. So here we are. We have our guest, Jessie Brookie.
Hi. Hi.
Welcome.
Welcome. Well, Jessie Brookie is a licensed marriage and family therapist at Haven Counseling Collective in Newport Beach, California. She holds an MS in Applied Human Development and Family Science from Northern Illinois University. Jessie is a trauma-informed therapist who is certified in prepare/enrich premarital couples counseling, couples therapy, and is also trained in level 1 and 2 of the Gottman Method couples therapy. She applies her extensive training specifically on how we attach and connect with others to help build healthy and secure attachments. In addition to working with couples, Jessie also works with young children and families who have experienced trauma to help develop and rebuild a secure attachment with one another while processing their traumatic experiences. We are so excited to have her on the show today. Welcome, Jessie.
Welcome. Thank you. Nice job reading that. I know it's a mouthful.
I was so worried I was gonna trip up on that, but
I feel like I'm just so grateful that we have someone specifically who specializes in trauma and attachment, because this is such, I think, a pervasive kind of sneaky issue that people don't talk about a lot or even really know to talk about,
honestly.
But it just affects every level of our lives, right? Work, family, friends, romantic relationships. Am I right about that aspect?
Yeah, definitely. So in my experience, I've been very lucky as a therapist to where I've worked with clients as young as 9 months old and as old as like in their 80s. And so I think what I've seen throughout my time as a clinician is that trauma can greatly affect us at any age, but also attachment and how we connect with others. And so when we have experienced a trauma, that can impact our relationships and how we trust others and just see the world.
Absolutely. Yeah, that was the first thing that I had thought about asking, was how does trauma impact how we see the world? How does it impact how we see other people?
Yeah.
How we are we viewing people as in a defensive way, like us against people?
Yeah, and I think first exploring a little bit of like what trauma is. And so trauma is essentially an emotional response. It can be just one single event that has happened that's been extremely distressing, or you have a fearful response to it, or it can be something that's happened over time. So imagine like being bullied over time or being in an abusive relationship, whether that's physical or emotional. And so when we go through those traumas, your core beliefs start to change about the world, about can I trust this person? Can I trust this environment, this space? And you experience this distortion. So I think that that is one piece of it. And research shows that our attachment styles can change over time. And so when we've experienced a trauma, we can have a secure attachment where we can feel very safe and comfortable, but then something bad happens and then that gets altered and that changes. And alternatively, I've had clients who have experienced a lot of trauma, a lot of stressors in their life, but then they develop very secure, happy relationships. And then that can also help to heal them and change too.
Yeah, that's really good to hear.
Yeah.
And also makes me think, like, you don't, in order to develop a secure attachment, you don't have to have fully healed from that trauma. It's not like you can use that secure attachment to help you heal from the trauma.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. And I would almost argue that we don't necessarily fully heal from those things, right? Because sometimes they come up as little nerves that are pinched throughout our lives. And we realize like, ooh, you know what? I actually that's something I still need to work on, or that's still affecting me in that way. So I think when it comes to these significant traumas, we might not be fully healed, but we can still have a secure attachment where we still do trust others, but the trauma might be something that we need to continuously work through throughout our lives.
Really interesting, the whole pinched nerve way of putting that too. It's like, yeah, that's exactly how it feels too when you are triggered in that moment. It's just like, ooh, yeah, that was weird. Something's a little off. So it's funny how that is sneaky in the way that that shows up too. It's pretty crazy.
Yeah, absolutely. I imagine, like for example, with some of the women that I've worked with, where they may have had a really difficult childhood, say they had a really unhealthy relationship with either parent, and they develop a secure relationship, they feel really good, they're happy, they have a marriage, they have kids, and then in raising their children, they find that the experiences they had in their own childhood are now coming back up. So they have worked through those things, but it might just appear, and then you realize you have to do a little bit more work to continue to work through that.
And I would imagine that makes sense because it's maybe you've worked through it in one way in one type of relationship, and then another type of relationship, you need to work through it in a different way because it's just a whole another ball game.
Exactly.
And when you talk about trauma, I've heard this concept of like big T, little T trauma. Can you explain that a little bit? It's good for me.
So little T traumas can be, well, I guess I'll start by explaining big T traumas. Those are the things we would usually think about when it comes to experiencing a war, experiencing sexual, physical abuse, have being in a really terrible accident where it's you have these clear responses to those things. So flashbacks, being unable to be in that environment, nightmares, all sorts of things, irritability, very common responses to trauma. And then we have these little T traumas that we might not necessarily know have affected us. Sometimes clients come in, they actually didn't realize that it has traumatized them. So something like an emotionally abusive relationship where over time they've developed these negative thoughts about themselves, and it really impacts how they can move forward in any other relationship. Or seeing like your parents' domestic violence, right? Where it hasn't directly happened to you, but it's still something that you were around that you experienced at that time. And so it's sometimes it's harder to make the connection that that was a traumatic experience when you have those little T trauma events that have happened.
I think that's like I think that's where people get confused with trauma too, is I think a lot of people just think of big T trauma when they hear the word trauma. That's most people's brains just go immediately to like big catastrophic events in our lives. But I think most people don't realize that there is this whole other category of trauma, which is the little T that you're mentioning, which affects us in so many different little ways. I feel like that's the sneaky part of trauma, you know, is the little T portion of that.
And I think it's really all in how you experience it, right? Because another person could go through a car accident or a fire or something like that, and they really can be fine. They can move forward and it does not affect them. But it's your own individual experience and how you are emotionally responding to that experience.
Yeah, that's a really good point because I feel like when I have been thinking about my childhood or any sort of little T trauma that I have come up with my therapist that I think has shaped or maybe increased my anxiety or shaped the way I see authority, something like that. I feel like when I'm talking about this, I can think of other people who have had the same experience and they're not reacting in the same way that I am. And
True.
it at first I feel like it made me want to not share or not talk about it as though it had affected me because I was kind of embarrassed or feeling like that wasn't okay, that I wasn't okay because of those things. But yeah, I think just clarifying that each response looks different for every person is really important.
It's not all standard across the board, which, you know, it's like that event is going to affect people in many different ways. It's not just a standard way of how it's going to go.
And that when you're describing your response, you're not, or like, I'm not blaming that person. I'm saying, like, this is the dynamic. I couldn't handle this. Or, you know, like speaking in I terms, right?
Yeah, exactly. Interesting.
So, what is the difference between attachment style and codependency when we kind of refer to those two things?
Yeah, so attachment style, that's more so how we emotionally bond with others. And when our attachment style becomes maladaptive and unhealthy, this can then lead to some of that codependency. So, with codependency, what that might look like is, for example, some one person as the caretaker, so holding a lot of the responsibility and wanting that that partner's approval, that partner's validation, right? And the other person is more so taking things from that partner. And so it's more unequal, it's unbalanced. And when there is that unbalance, they can lose their identity in that. They can just feel a sense of worthlessness if they aren't having their needs met. So it can relate to our attachment styles, but it's more of that unhealthy behavior and unhealthy pattern within the relationship.
Interesting. What are the attachment styles?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, so there's four different ones. And so each one is very unique. One of them actually has a mixture of the two. So I'll start by explaining kind of the ideal one that we would all love to get to, but it's very hard to get there sometimes. So that's a secure attachment style. So that's when we are able to set boundaries with others in an appropriate way. We feel safe, we feel happy, we feel connected in our relationships, and we're able to communicate effectively. And I think one thing to keep in mind with this attachment style is does not mean that we're perfect. It does not mean that we never get into a conflict, right? But when we do experience a conflict, experience a challenge, it doesn't completely deteriorate the relationship. You can work through it. You can admit your mistakes. You can communicate with that person and move forward. Versus some of these other attachment styles, you do start to feel or experience that breakdown of the relationship a lot more heavily. So, with an anxious attachment style, this is when you might crave more of that emotional intimacy with your partner or with any type of relationship, but you worry that your needs aren't going to be met, or you might feel like as much energy as you're putting into that person, you're not getting that same energy back. And so you just feel like your needs are truly unmet. And you feel a lot of fear, you feel a lot of anxiety, and worry that what if this is my fault? What if they leave me? Those types of things. Yeah, in relationships there, they tend to consume a lot of energy. So you might be sensitive. I think the great thing about an anxious attachment style is you're very sensitive to other people's needs, right? You notice when their mood changes, when the energy shifts, but it might not be so accurate. We might internalize that we're the problem, they're mad at us, but that might not always be the case. So we are very sensitive to those mood shifts. And then we also might, when we feel someone pulling back from us, we become anxious, we become fearful, and we do something called protest behaviors. I'm not sure if you guys have read the book Attached. It's one of my favorite books. I always recommend it. It's by Amir Levine, I believe, and Rachel Heller. And so in that book, they explain protest behaviors. And these are little things we do to try to pull that person back in. So this could be constantly calling, texting. It could even be withdrawing from them, not texting them back, hoping that we're going to get their attention, right? It could be us using sarcasm, passive aggressiveness, threatening to leave them, all the fun things we do, hoping that our partner will come back and that things will go back to normal. The opposite of then the anxious attachment style is avoidant. This one is where we want closeness, but we equate that intimacy to our lack of independence, and our lack of autonomy. And so it can be very fearful and comfortable when we realize we are so close with someone, and then they have that urge to withdraw and pull away. And I find that working with my avoidant clients, they often explain that their partners tell them that they are so emotionally distant, or that they're just not there for them. They don't know how to communicate with them. And then they tend to shut down a lot more quickly. And then the last one is disorganized. So this is a wonderful one that's a mix of the two. I will say I see this one a lot with my clients who do suffer from a personality disorder, or if you have experienced significant traumas in your life. So this one is more of that extreme end of, I hate you, but I don't want you to leave me. And it goes back and forth, minute by minute, day by day. It can feel very confusing for the other partner and for the person themselves. They don't really know what they want. They don't know how to express those needs. It's just a lot of uncertainty where they need closeness, but they just really don't trust it. They don't trust the world around them, and then they tend to get very irritable and very angry, much more quickly than other people. And they might also engage in more self-sabotaging relationships. So with a disorganized attachment, it is very challenging to keep a long-term relationship.
Wow. Yeah, I don't think when we talked about attachments in our attachment episode season one, I don't think we even covered disorganized attachment, which I think it's the one that's not talked about a lot. And so we're really excited to have you explain that just because I do think that relates to so many people, especially the people who have experienced severe trauma, like you mentioned. But would you say the term disorganized attachment kind of matches exactly how they feel inside, which is disorganized, right?
Yeah, exactly. I think that it describes it very well. And it's confusing to them, right? Because they just aren't sure. And I think at the end of the day, we all do crave that connection. But I imagine it's so hard for these type of people because they might not have had that safe connection, that safe relationship before. So they don't know what that's supposed to feel like and look like. And they might not know how to behave themselves in that relationship as a result.
Yeah, makes complete sense. Yep.
And with like disorganized attachment, it's kind of it's a mixture of both. But then separately, if someone isn't disorganized, but is one of the three, can their attachment style shift and change?
Yeah, so that's a really good thing to keep in mind, is it can certainly shift based on who you are around. So, for example, you can be a very secure person in your workplace. You are confident, you know how to communicate, you know how to get your needs met. You are strong, stable, secure, and happy in your workplace environment. But then when it comes to, say, friendships or dating, you suddenly become a puddle and you're anxious, right? And you don't know how to react. Yes, I relate as well. And so it can definitely shift in that way, depending on who you're around, depending on how those people are meeting your needs too, because you can have, say, for example, one friendship where you do feel very secure and connected, but then another relationship where it's very confusing. There's this push and pull that happens, and you suddenly find yourself either as the avoidant person or the anxious attachment style. So it definitely can shift depending on the people and the environments.
Totally makes sense. That makes me feel
Yes.
better. That's totally me. And I feel like at work I feel secure. With Brooke I feel secure. With a couple other people I can think of, friendship wise, I'm very anxious. But then, and then in any romantic relationship that I'm fully in with one person, I'm anxious. But when I'm on a dating app, and I'm just meeting people, I'm very avoidant. And I'll notice that I'm just really pushing people away, not answering any questions. Like, yeah. And I feel like I can be all three.
Yeah. Do you think like there is a difference too between being in a committed relationship with someone? I think you are pretty much confirming this, but like, cause it shifts and depends. So like what Megan mentioned, she might be avoidant with dating specifically just in a casual sense versus in a relationship with someone, she's more anxious. That can happen, right? I mean, according to what you're saying.
Yeah, absolutely. That can definitely happen. And yeah. I think too, you can enter a relationship where, say, you start out in this anxious, avoidant dynamic, and that can shift, that can change as long as both people are working on it and trying to improve the communication. So there's always going to be this fluidity that is capable of happening, depending on the interactions between you, the work you're putting into it, all of those things.
Wow. Makes sense.
It's so interesting, yeah. Especially the shifting aspect. I think we get in such a fixed mindset about things where it's like, oh, I found out that I'm an anxious attachment, therefore that is me, that is my personality. And it's like, well, no, that doesn't necessarily
every situation.
Yeah.
Well, and what are some examples of anxious behavior versus avoidant behavior?
Yeah. So, with anxious attachment styles, typically what you will see is, say you meet someone and you hit it off really well, right? But then there might be this overthinking, overanalyzing that happens of imagining what your future will be right after that first date of like, oh my gosh, 6 months from now, we can go and do this together. And this is what this will look like. And so we really hope for the best outcome. And we imagine these things long term. And then when we notice like those slight shifts in behavior where maybe that person is pulling back, we then suddenly overanalyze those things. We might be checking social media a lot, checking their account every 5 minutes. Have they seen my story? Are they looking at this? Right. So those are really common behaviors that happen with the anxious attachment style. And they are that person may also be on your mind of like, what if I just said this? What if I did this? What if I talk to them in this way? Maybe this will get their attention if I do this. So a lot of being stuck in your own head is what happens with that anxious attachment style. And then the avoidant attachment style, you know, it's more of that withdrawal. Like you kind of get a little warning sign that comes up of like, you know what? Might be getting too close. This is a warning sign. This person might not be good for me. I'm just going to shut off and distance myself rather than communicating about it of like, you know what? I'm just not ready for that. Or I'm not okay with this thing, or this came up and I'm feeling a little uncomfortable. They will just shut down and retreat, and block off communication, ignore calls, do those types of things, and often avoid thinking about and working through whatever thing came up.
Yeah, everything about
the nail on the head.
Yeah.
That's
yeah. Especially with the anxious. I that's, you know, what's funny is like I feel secure in my work relationships, but if I'm in a relationship and I'm feeling anxious, I'm having that anxious attachment episode going on, it will consume my thoughts so much to where now what the secureness with work is, I don't even care about work. Like I'm worried about whatever's happening with this person at this moment at like 10 o'clock on a Wednesday when I should be focused on my work. It's like all consuming. And I used to think I was crazy before learning about attachment styles. Cause I thought, why can't I focus on the task at hand right now? Why is my brain with this random situation with this person? You know what I mean?
Yeah. It's exhausting. And, you know, I think a lot of people beat themselves up about it because I think in social media and on different platforms, people are saying, you have to do this work. You have to be at this level. You have to be strong, confident, XYZ. But then this one thing happens and it pulls us back, and we feel so bad about that when it is such a normal experience. It is such a common experience. It might not be the healthiest, right? We want to work forward from that and we want to try to do better. But so many people go through that very same situation, and it's okay, right? It happens. And I think the important thing is to learn from that and try to figure out, okay, what can I be doing right now to distract myself? How can I make myself feel better? What am I noticing about my behavior right now that might not be the healthiest? And how can I change that? And so actively trying to take those steps, even if they're baby steps, that's the important part, rather than beating yourself up about like every single time, like I'm with a romantic partner, I find myself falling back into this, and I'm doing all this work to make myself feel better and feel confident, but then I just shut myself down and suddenly it feels like I've made no progress at all. That type of thinking is not helpful.
I mean, speaking of healing and moving forward, one of the things that I wanted to know was, yeah, why is it important to know your attachment style? How can that help you?
Yeah, so I think being aware of it will help you over time to overcome some of these patterns that you kind of explained will occur, where it becomes debilitating, it becomes overwhelming and consumes our day. We want to have close relationships that fulfill us, both for an anxious and an avoidant person. And so we really want to recognize what typical patterns do we engage in? What relationships are the most debilitating or concerning for us? And maybe what needs to change? Because I think that understanding ourselves first, knowing we can't change the other person, we can't control them, right? We can only control ourselves. That's at least a step in the right direction. And then that can help us to look at, okay, with this particular individual in my life, whether it be a friendship, family member, romantic relationship, how can I start to shift things? Or if I can't, do I need to take a look at if this relationship needs to be in my life, or I need to have this level of closeness with this person?
Such a good point to do that, only because, yeah, it could become so external. We become so obsessed with the other person instead of checking in with ourselves too and being like, wait, is this relationship, number one, is this relationship even right for me? And number two, is there a way that this could shift? I mean, if we feel that it is right for us, maybe there is a way this could somehow shift. So, yeah, I think those are two very important things to look at.
We kind of forget to do that. I feel like I do in my anxious spirals. I'm like, the only thing to do is freak out and try to control this, when really, like, take a step back, calm yourself, and then assess, do I want to be in this?
Yeah.
You know?
I'm miserable half the time. Why
Yeah.
is this even worth it for me? Yeah.
And it's so much easier said than done, right? And right now we're in a very calm state and we're like, of course, these are the steps to do. And that makes sense. But when we are in that state of mind, it is very challenging. And so having these, this reflection and this understanding to prepare yourself for those times will help. Even if it's a slow process, even if like maybe the you realize, you know what, I didn't do the best in this relationship. You know what, in this one, I'm doing a little bit better. This is something else I can do to set boundaries or to communicate. It's that slow progress towards what you essentially want to achieve.
Yeah.
I would say in my own life, and after doing some reflection, I've noticed it's been kind of a mix of me choosing the wrong partners, but then also me engaging in anxious behaviors, which then kind of caused the relationship to crumble. So, I think it's important to be honest with yourself. Like what you had mentioned is looking back and being like, well, I think there could be a mix of the two, choosing wrong people and also engaging in anxious behaviors that went overboard, you know? Just being honest with ourselves, right? So,
Yeah,
but
I think the honesty is so important.
for sure, for sure. And I think so this is the big question that I think a lot of us also want to know too, which is, with anxious and avoidant attachments, why are we drawn to each other like a moth to a flame? Like, I
We
have,
love each other.
gosh, it's ridiculous. Like how many times I've gone with an avoidant by accident.
Yes. Well, I think for our anxious attachment styles, we hope that they will change, right? Like we see a glimpse of it in the beginning where things might be going well, of like, oh my gosh, this person is showing interest in me, and we had a great date and it went really well. And maybe there's a few things to work on, but you know what? It's okay. Like maybe they're not texting back, but it's totally fine. This will get better. This is going to be great. So we hold on to that hope. And I think part of that too is if you had experiences in your childhood where you had, say, a caregiver who didn't meet your needs, right? So you had a parent who was in and out or just wasn't consistent with you. You hoped at that time in your childhood that things would get better and they didn't. And so you might also see that same reflection in your romantic relationships. And so you really try to fix that with that person. But our job is not to fix that. And similarly, for an avoidant person, whether they know it or not, they do want that closeness. They do want that connection. It's a human natural reaction and need for connection. But it feels uncomfortable. And so they want it, but then they have to distance themselves. And so there's this really, really common pattern that happens between the anxious and avoidant. A lot of times it's termed as a pursuer distancer pattern, where when you notice, typically the anxious person is pursuing more. So calling, texting, wanting to hang out, wanting to do these things. And the more they do that, the distancer, the avoidant person, starts to pull back. We'll stop answering. We'll say, no, I'm busy. We'll answer with one or two word texts. And the anxious person starts to pursue more, and the avoidant then withdraws more. But then the fun part that happens is when the anxious person decides, I'm done, I don't want to do this, or they start to withdraw in hopes that they'll get a reaction. And the avoidant person starts to notice, they're not hitting me up as much. I'm not hearing from them. Let me reach out because I do want that connection. And so then they reach out to the anxious person. And then the pattern kind of continues where there's this push and pull between the two. And this can go on not just in the dating stages, it can go on through marriage, through long-term relationships. This trend can continue of this back and forth between the two partners that can be exhausting, but at the same time, that attraction to one another is still there, and it's very hard to get out of.
Well, I just realized with my therapist that I like knew this, but I just realized it kind of at like a soul level of like I am in my relationships recreating that relationship with my caregiver of, always being the one to initiate, try to earn their love, never getting a response, always seeing them like do things or compliment other people instead of me, feeling that I'm always trying to earn, you and never getting that, and how my connection with an avoidant person is exactly that, always and forever. So I think that's why I keep choosing that, and I don't even, it's so nuts how our bodies and minds do that without us consciously knowing that that's happening.
Yeah, well, and I don't know if this has been your experience, but what I've noticed too is when you're in this relationship dynamic, you might get these almost types of breadcrumbs from the avoidant person, right? Like little cues, little signs that they're still interested, and that continues to give us hope. So they might reach out with a text, they might take us on a good date one night, they might do something that you're like, okay, like we're still good, we can do this, we can move forward, I can see the potential. But it's just keeping you hanging on, and it's giving them just enough closeness, but not too much to where they start to feel uncomfortable.
Yeah, so funny how when that happens, you equate this small thing that is good or fine or okay to that the whole thing
Everything.
is good.
Yeah.
Why are we doing that?
Yeah.
Just, yeah. works.
Well, when someone gives you so little, right? Then when they give you that thing, that feels really good, and that brings back that sense of normalcy and happiness, even though it's not actually meeting all the needs that you have.
Crazy. Would you also say too, I think I read something about this somewhere, but avoidance too, like if they decide to cut off the relationship at one point, they are kind of that one ex that is always trying to later get back with you after realizing what they lost. Would you say
Yep.
that they're kind of that phantom ex that's, coming back,
Yes. And I would say the same too for an anxious attachment style. If you do cut it off, the avoidant will also come back. So I think that that happens a lot where they then might realize that they've lost all of these relationships where it had the potential to go somewhere, but the avoidant person was so fearful, right? Or just couldn't make that commitment. But then they come to a point where they realize they really want connection, they really want that care and support. And they see, oh my gosh, there was this person from 2 years ago who treated me so well and did all these things for me. And I really miss that. So I'm going to come back to them. I'm going to keep on reaching out to them in hopes that they might fall into that same pattern that maybe we once had.
Would you say that I haven't read this anywhere, but I personally am always looking for, or like I guess when I look back at my relationships, the thing that can like that brought me to this person or kept me with this person, I kept saying like, but they just get me. We just have this connection that I don't have with other people. And I'm very suspicious of myself feeling that or saying that now. And I just was wondering if that's an anxious attachment thing, if that's a codependent thing, because I kind of am calling bullshit on myself,
I think it depends on the situation. I imagine for a lot of anxious and avoidant people, they may have had a prior experience that has hurt them, whether it's been in their childhood or whatever the case, but they might have some similar experience, similar connection where they understand they've been hurt before this thing has happened. So they might feel that level of connection with that person, that might be real or might be sort of fantasized or embellished in our own minds.
And then something about, well, again, I don't know, you tell me, but I feel like something about anxious attachments when they feel that or think that, at least this is true for me, I feel like that can't happen again. It won't happen again. There's no one else out there that will get me. There's no one else. This is it. This or nothing.
I would say a lot of people have that same mindset of thinking, right? Because there is, and I don't know if it's just an anxious attachment thing. I think so much is tangled into that, like with social media telling us that all the secure attachment people are getting married, they're getting swooped up, all that's left are the anxious and avoidant attachments. That's a really scary thing to hear. And so there's this pressure. I think there's also a lot of pressure depending on your age. I work with a lot of women who are in their mid to late 20s who are going through their own sort of crises at this time of what is my life going to look like? When am I going to find that person? When am I going to get married and have kids and move on and have a future? And so I think there is just the societal pressure that happens of what if everyone is taken? What if there's no one out there for me? And also with that anxious attachment style, just that that feeling of what if this is the best person out there for me and I just lost them? What if they're going to leave me? What if this person who should be my partner, what if I messed that up?
Interesting. Yeah, on a side note of that, because I always find it fascinating too with this attachment issue and social media specifically. I mean, I know attachment styles must have existed for so long before social media. I just wonder with the invention of text and with now Instagram and viewing people's stories and stuff like that, do you think that's made these issues kind of worse in a sense? Because now we're just playing that comparison game, wondering why we're not married, why we're not having those things, etc.
Definitely, definitely. I think it's increased the amount of anxiety we experience about why we aren't at a certain stage or a certain place in our life when all of these people are. And also, you see these happy relationships, these happy couples on social media when you have no idea the layers that are underneath it. And so that then makes us focus or hyper focus on our current relationship or situationship. And we're wondering, well, they aren't doing this for me. This isn't happening. We aren't connecting in this way. There's something that must be wrong, or I should be doing more. And so there is so much pressure involved in that, so much more anxiety. On the same side of that, too, I think it can make us more avoidant. Like you were explaining with dating apps, you can look at one flaw and say, nope, they're not for me. Or they can ask one question a little bit weird, and we're like, this guy's kind of a
Yeah. Is
weirdo,
that a lot on a dating
right? Yes. And so it is so easy to fall into either style where you're either extremely anxious or you're extremely avoidant. And it's not a genuine connection that happens versus meeting someone in person and having that face-to-face contact.
It's sad. Interesting. It is. It is sad. And I
Yeah.
have one more side question. I'm sorry.
That's okay.
I just thought of it randomly. I'm curious to know what your take is on situationships in general. I know this is not really themed, but like, do you think those are healthy for us to have? Should we be having situationships, which really, I mean, if nobody knows what that is, it's like not a relationship because the person doesn't want to make it official, but yet they don't want to see you with anyone else. So it's that weird middle ground. Do you think those are healthy for us to have?
I think it depends. I think if both people are truly okay with where you are at, absolutely go for it. But if you aren't communicating that I actually need more from you, but I'm scared you're going to leave, or I'm scared this is going to end, if I express that, after we hook up, I come home and then I cry myself to sleep. That is very unhealthy, and you should not be in that situationship. And so it really just depends on if you're okay with what's happening, if you're able to communicate when there are any uncomfortable feelings or experiences within that. And if you are, wonderful. That's great for you if that's the level of commitment and connection you want to have with that person. And then who knows, maybe it can grow, but there's also not that expectation that it will in this situationship. I think it's challenging for people to both fully be okay with it. And so it makes a lot of them unhealthy and they not be long lasting. But if you can, then great.
Interesting. Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. Yeah, and that makes sense why there wouldn't be a blanket answer to that. I think it just depends on what each person is comfortable with and whether or not they're having open, honest communication about that, for sure.
And it's hard for people to be honest with themselves. Like you know, sometimes I've thought like, yeah, I don't expect anything. I don't need anything more. And then, uh-oh, wait. Whoa, wait a minute. I'm expecting like a lot. And I think too, like maybe just going easy on yourself in those moments because maybe you genuinely thought you wouldn't want that, but then you do. And then in the moment when you realize it, just sharing it. Because I think that's where I get messed up, where I'm like, oh my gosh, I lied, or like, I don't want to tell them now because I can't change my mind, you know? And that's just not true.
Exactly.
And I think that shows that communication is important in any type of relationship and interaction we have. Even if you're in a situationship that doesn't give you an excuse to not communicate, you still have to communicate. You still have to be able to understand what the other person is feeling. So if you have a moment where you're like, oh shoot, I actually have some real feelings here. I just got a hint of jealousy. Being able to explain that and work through that oftentimes is a lot easier and feels a lot better versus bottling that up, hoping it goes away. And then what usually happens is it actually just builds, or some resentment or some other types of feelings develop there. So even if you're in a situationship, you should still communicate and express what you're feeling in that relationship.
Good point. Because I feel like a lot of people, you may use it as a way to not communicate. Like, that's kind of what they don't want to do. That's what they mean by no expectations, is that I don't want to have to communicate with you. Because that's the hard part, you know?
So I, if you're comfortable sharing, what is your attachment style at this time? And I mean, we talked about how it's different with
Different people,
people, just,
settings.
but is there any one that you primarily experience right now with any dynamics in your life?
Yeah, so I would say that over my lifetime in general, I am definitely more of that anxious attachment style. So I can relate to a lot of what you guys were explaining and talking about. I think that working in this field has been so therapeutic for me, but also having my own therapy, having a strong support system with different relationships, that has helped a lot, but that hasn't always been the case. So my personal experience, I grew up in a low-income divorced family. My dad was in the army, so he was always gone, just physically and emotionally. Being in the military, it kind of cut off all emotions, right? And so there's just a lot of instability that I experienced. And so I grew up not trusting some relationships, I think, especially with my relationships with men. And so because of this, I would have this fear or worry that, when is that other shoe going to drop? When are they going to leave? What is that going to look like? And I would oftentimes feel like what I was putting into something, I wasn't getting that same energy back. So definitely that anxious attachment style. But like I said, in the work I've done, both building myself as a professional and my own therapy and the positive relationships I have had, that's helped me a lot. But also, I'm not perfect. Myself as a therapist, being a single therapist out in the dating world is a weird journey, where you know a lot of information and you sometimes feel like it would be so great if I just didn't know this, because ignorance is really bliss. So you have this. I have this side of me where intellectually I know, okay, I'm seeing this happen. This is not great. I need to not engage with this avoidant person, right? But then there's that human side of me that sometimes, yes, I will fall into that trap. Yes, I will not express my boundaries effectively or communicate what I wanted to actually say. And so it's that constant work, right? Even though I'm being a therapist 5 days out of the week, and I'm doing my own personal work, I still make mistakes. I still have to continue to be mindful and move forward. And so, yeah, I think sometimes I can feel very secure, and other days I'm definitely more of that anxious attachment style. So there is that fluidity that just naturally happens. But I do think too, that's what helps me with my clients, right? Of their own experiences and their own frustrations with one day they come into my office and they're feeling great, and then another day they're really struggling because something's happened, a relationship has deteriorated or not worked out, and I can really understand that and empathize with that experience.
Absolutely.
That's great.
Yeah, it's important to be reminded that, I mean, even though you have all that knowledge and expertise, you're still human. You're just,
Yeah, even you, like, to not latch onto perfection, because I feel like, yeah, we all need help with some self-compassion, I think, you know, just being a person. Because, yeah, a lot of my life is telling myself I shouldn't be XYZ, you know. And I feel like instead it's more just like it should be more of an observation, right? This is happening.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
Well, and I think honestly, women experience a lot of pressure of what they should be doing and what they shouldn't be doing. And this is what this is supposed to look like. And this is how you're supposed to act. And sometimes we're just human. Sometimes we, fall into the wrong relationship, the wrong pattern of communicating, and it happens and it's okay.
Honestly, it's the simplest thing, but it's like we need to hear that. I need to hear that.
I definitely do as well. So, is there hope for us, for all of us anxious and avoidants out there? What do you say we can start doing to start moving to more secure attachment styles with everyone in our lives?
So I will say that therapy is a great thing. I mean, not everyone has access to therapy. Not everyone's able to do that. But if you can, and if you feel like that is something that you do have access to, seeing a therapist, working through it with them is a great way to identify what attachment style you are and actively working with your therapist on how can I start to change these behaviors. Of course, if you can't go to therapy, it's okay too. There's so many resources. There's so many things online and books and things like that that can really help you. Podcasts like this are great as well, as a great resource to identify what am I doing? What is my attachment style? What unhealthy patterns do I fall into? And what can I start to change? So really that awareness is the most important thing. And then starting to really look at what specific behaviors do we want to change? And seeing who we might want to reconsider as a person in our lives, or how to communicate with them that if they're continuing to do this to us, what that would look like and what we would need to change in order to keep them in our lives.
So there is hope, is what you're saying.
There's hope. There's hope. It takes a lot of work. And I've worked with couples who have come into my office. One is very anxious and one is very avoidant. And they have such a lack of hope of this isn't going to happen. This isn't going to work out. And it can shift, it can change. It's that active self-awareness, it's that motivation to change, it's that willingness to be vulnerable and address whatever is going on. So, if both partners are willing to do the work, absolutely it can work. I think also, if there's one of you that's willing to do the work and the other isn't, then you kind of have a choice there where you have to decide, am I willing to just accept the things the way they are, right? Am I willing to turn a blind eye and say, sometimes my partner might just withdraw and pull away, and I need to be accepting of that if I'm going to stay, and this is how it may just continue. Or if you want to stay in the relationship, but you aren't okay with that and you are fighting it every time, well, then there's going to be some challenges. There's going to be that toxicity, that unhappiness that might happen. So that would be a really big challenge if you're constantly fighting this, if there's this constant back and forth that just makes both of you unhappy. That's when more of that toxic relationship happens that sometimes people, it's really hard to look at and be honest with yourselves that it might not be the best relationship for you.
Absolutely.
And breakups, the kind of changes that come after breakups are just so like earth shattering. It's the hard, it's such a hard decision to make, especially if you've been in it for such a long time. That's your norm, you know? It's very
Yeah,
difficult.
your whole life becomes that person. Your body makeup becomes connected to that person and you're fully attached to them. And so not having them in your life, it is, you're grieving, right? You're grieving that loss of that person you felt so connected to and attached to. And it is such a hard decision and it takes time and you can work through some of those wounds. It won't always be that way, but in that moment, it does feel very earth-shattering and it's a challenging choice to make, absolutely.
Well, especially because attachment styles have to do with our most inner intimacy needs, right? So it's like that is such, we're not talking about little personality quirks or anything. We're talking about how we feel loved, how we feel accepted, appreciated by our partner. So it's really, I mean, that's why I think it's so important to really learn these attachment styles, especially if you are partnered with someone. You know, learning what each other's styles are can, you know, really make a difference when it comes to the actual intimacy and the connection, right? So,
Yeah,
yeah.
absolutely. Absolutely. I think that just being aware and having the understanding of how you are, how your partner might be, that will help you guys go such a long way in building that happiness and hopefully building a long-term relationship that is successful.
And I was thinking, we're both single, so like looking forward, trying to find a partner, I feel like it's important to find a partner who wants to talk about things like this. That being a boundary that if I bring this up and you are annoyed, okay, that's probably not someone who I want to
Same, yeah.
be with,
Exactly. Yeah.
And I think too, doing this work and still, you know, being single, being out in the dating world, it's okay if the partner that you're pursuing isn't perfect, right? But if they're willing to change, if they're motivated to alter what patterns they may naturally fall into or what their attachment style is. That's the important part. And it's okay if they're not perfect, if they're not fully secure yet. But if they're willing to address that and be honest with themselves and listen to what your needs are, I think that's such an important thing.
Yeah. And that their actions match their words, because I feel like
Yes.
that's mainly been my problem, is that I will say all this stuff. I will maybe like set a boundary,
Yeah.
but then not really hold them to that because they agree. We have good conversations about it. I feel like we're communicating well, but then it doesn't really change. And then I will bring it up again, kind of like, I'm sorry to be bringing this up again. And then,
Yeah.
their response, they always have some way of talking about it where it makes me feel okay. But then I look back after it ends and I'm like, they never actually changed that thing though.
Right. It was just minimal effort.
Yeah.
Exactly. And when you had mentioned too, or I think actually you mentioned it, of they have to be willing to be able to talk about, that's a boundary for both of us is, you know, we want you to be able to openly talk about this and not poo-poo it about, you know, attachment styles and stuff. I got kind of lucky in a sense where the past few people that I began talking to on the dating apps were, I mean, one of the, I didn't even bring it up. The first question they mentioned is, what is your attachment style? Yeah.
Oh, wow.
Although, I mean, I will say I do date women. So I
Okay.
think that there's, I feel like women are more prone to,
Been.
oh, more open to talk about
Yeah.
things like this. But I think it's really cool that that's starting to now become into the language of when we start dating and talking to people. It's so cool that people are seeing this as an important thing to know, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah, I am seeing. I think the one great thing about social media right now is the amount of mental health knowledge that is going out into the world. And people are more aware of these things, whether it's attachment styles, love languages, what narcissism is, what these different things are, right? That we should just be a little bit more aware of. I think that knowledge is spreading. Of course, there is always the risk of misinformation, but it's at least out there. And so people can be more aware and can have more conversations about it that they might not have had normally. And I am seeing like my clients walking in the door, they've never thought about therapy before. They never thought it was something they would be okay with. And now they're starting to shift that mindset. And so I think that is a really great thing that's happening in the world today. Super
Absolutely.
cool.
Super
I
awesome.
love that. Well, Jesse,
Honestly.
thank you so much for coming on and talking to us. We really appreciate it.
Yeah, where can we find out more about you?
Yeah.
Yes. So I do have my professional Instagram. So that's at Jessie underscore the underscore therapist. So at Jessie the therapist. So you can connect with me there. I talk a lot about different concepts, mostly to do with couples, dating, relationships. I talk about my couples therapy work that I do at my private practice I work at. On my Instagram page is my private practice I work at, the Haven Counseling Collective. So you can also see our page and check it out and see what I'm working on. And of course, if you are interested in therapy with me or wanting to start services, you can always reach out directly.
Hey,
Awesome.
amazing.
This has been so enlightening. I
Yes.
think we needed this more than anything.
I know.
I mean,
We should be, paying you for therapy. I mean, we really appreciate you answering our questions.
No, this has been great. I love being able to talk about this and just being able to have more conversations about everything that we all experience. It's a human behavior, it's human patterns that we should all know about. So this has been great. So thank you guys so much.
Of
Thank
course.
you,
Jesse. We just have one last question for
Yeah.
you.
Do
Do you
you
like
like us? Yes, absolutely.
us? We won Jesse's love.
Thanks, Jesse.
Thank you.
Hey.
Bye.